get out of town before it's too late, my love. Get out of town, be good to me, please. Why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be contented to charm the birds off the trees? Just disappear, I care for you much too much. And when you are near, close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that, darling, it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of town. Please, why wish me harm? Why not retire to a farm and be contented to charm the birds off the trees? Just disappear, I care for you much too much. When you're near, close to me, dear, we touch too much. The thrill when we meet is so bittersweet that, darling, it's getting me down. So on your mark, get set, get out of
to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all, that's all. Thank you. these arms to enfold you, and a love time can never destroy. If you're wondering what I'm asking in return, dear, you'll be glad to know that my demands are small. Say it's me that you'll adore for now and evermore. That's all.
Started. We have three agenda items tonight. One of them is a continuance, and we estimate that the other two items will run about 60 minutes. Any documents that you need that pertain to tonight's meeting are available on the city's website and here at City Hall. And finally, if you do have your cell phone on, if you would turn it off, that would be very helpful. Would you join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Madam Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Thank you. Commissioner Daniels.
Present.
Commissioner Stapleman.
Present.
Commissioner Wallace. Vice Chair Sheeler.
Present.
Chair Solomon.
Here, thank you. We'll now begin with our public forum. This is the time for any member of the public to address the commission on an item or any items that are not on tonight's agenda. Do we have any speaker slips this evening?
No, Chair Solomon.
Thank you. Well, then we'll move on to the next item. Staff, are there any amendments or adjustments to tonight's agenda?
Commissioners, there are none.
All right. Well, Madam Clerk, will you please read out the first item into the record?
Item A1 is the Planning Commission minutes for the Planning Commission meeting of October 11th, 2010.
Okay. Are there any discussion of the minutes from October?
I'd move to approve.
I second.
Thank you. All in favor, aye.
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 Motion carries.
Abstain.
Oh, that's right. Thank you. Okay, we'll now move to the public hearing portion of our agenda. Madam Clerk, will you please read item B1 into the record?
Thank you. Item B1 is public hearing on item 08-198-GPA-RZ-LLA-DP-CUP, also 10-026-DPAM, the Montecito Bank and Trust Project, located at 6900/6950 Hollister Avenue, APN 073-140-006 and -019.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and Commissioners, this is a staff request for a continuance of this item. As we were preparing your packet, we realized that you need more documents than we had originally anticipated. So we will use this continuance time to prepare those materials for you. And I also wanted to let you know that the applicant is in concurrence with this request for a continuation. And the date would be to December 13th of this year.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Miller. Will the clerk please read agenda item B2 into the record? We do have to have a motion. I'm sorry.
May motion to continue.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Motion carries 5-0.
Okay, thank you. Item B2 is a public hearing on 10-131-GC, General Plan Conformity Determination for Matilda Drive Property Acquisitions.
Good evening, Ms. Wells.
Good evening, Chair and Commissioners. So tonight's item is general plan conformity. I think we've done one before, so this is the second time that I've have the privilege of bringing a general plan conformity before the Planning Commission. And this is in specific regards to the Matilda Drive parcels that are near and dear to my heart. And so let's go to, here we are. The reason that we're doing this is to meet the requirements of Government Code 65402. And that requires that you report on the location, the purpose, and the extent of the acquisition, that it meets the requirements of and conforms with the general plan. So more specifically, the map that is on the screen and is also in your handouts is from our general plan. And it's in our open space element. And it's at the western part of Goleta, so you can see where the ocean is and Highway 101. This Hollister's at the top of the screen. And then you go down where you can see subject area, and there's a circle. And that's Matilda Drive. Matilda Drive goes straight down from Hollister towards Elwood Mesa. Santa Barbara Shores and the Coronado Butterfly Preserve, et cetera, are to the west or to the left on the screen. So those particular parcels, there's 18 of them, are identified as with a residential land use and zoning. And they, previous to the city's incorporation, they were also residential. So we kept that residential designation, but acknowledged the fact that similar to the Elwood Mesa, there's environmentally sensitive habitat area, monarch butterfly habitat. There, it's within Devereaux Creek overflow channel. So there's wetlands. And it's really not a very suitable site for development. So if you look at this next parcel map, this is a zoom in on those 18 parcels. And the two particular parcels that we're talking about tonight, because those are the two that we've engaged with discussions with the landowners, are the ones that we're talking about for the general plan conformity determination. So this is the first time we're doing this for these particular Matilda parcels. And again, on the previous slide, their overlay was identifying the sites as ESHA and also as open space for preservation of natural resources. So it's very specifically called out in our open space element and identified as such, and there's also an implementation policy that I'll be talking about in just a minute. So if, Claudia, you switch to the next slide. Thank you. Oh, no, yeah, there you go. No, the other one. So if you look where the red arrows are, and then you look at the assessor parcel numbers, and you move over to the other side, there's a street. Well, it's actually not a street. It's an unimproved extension of Matilda Drive, and that would be some future, if there was a road improvement that went through, and it would basically be through the ESHA. So now, if Claudia, there you go. So on this slide is an assessor parcel map, and it's flipped so that north is on the left side of the screen, and that two parcels are highlighted in red at the bottom right of the screen. And just this map is just demonstrating that historically this map is very old, and it's been around for a long time identifying these parcels for development, which has never occurred, of course, because of the dense vegetation and the ESHA and the topography. So the next slide. So there's three specific determinations that you have to make: the location and the purpose and the extent. So quickly going through them, the location, it's identified in our general plan on figure 2-1. The assessor parcel numbers are specifically listed in open space implementation action 1 as two of the 18 parcels. The purpose is to expand the Elwood Mesa Spurling Preserve open space that the city owns. And the extent is meaning it's two of 18 parcels that comprise our open space overlay as identified in our general plan and would extend out our passive open space area for the public. And I should point out that the purchase of these parcels is a goal in our strategic plan, and it would be the second purchase, second to the purchase of Elwood Mesa, The first being the Doty parcel that's located to the southeast of Matilda Drive. And we have $315,000 in an open space acquisition reserve set aside. And I think we can thank Claudia for that. And she's here to my left and has been assisting us with the staff report. And if with this purchase for $175,000, it would leave $205,000 in the bank for future purchases. And Claudia just continues to work to obtain additional grant funding to supplement that set-aside money for future purchases. And lastly, this item went to the City Council on October 19th for authorization to proceed with a purchase. So we're ready to go, and we just need this general plan conformity determination. And we do that via a resolution. And if you could flip. And so the last slide is just identifying the resolution for the acquisition of those two particular parcels, and with the statement that they're in conformance with our general plan to add in the future our additional parcels to make our Elwood Mesa even a larger and better public open space. Thank you.
Thank you. I need to ask for a little bit of clarification. Is this actually a public hearing item?
This is a public hearing. The government code requires that the 65402 determinations are a hearing, and did you open the public hearing?
Not yet. Thank you. But I will. All right. So, commissioners, I need any declarations, site visits, ex parte communications?
None here.
No ex parte, but I am familiar with the site.
Myself included.
No ex parte, but I know where that is.
The same for me.
Yes, all around. Okay. Any questions from the planning commissioners of staff?
I may have a question, but I was just wondering if there was going to, I'd like to hear maybe public comment before I would do that, if there is any.
Madam Clerk?
I have not received any requests to speak.
Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Sheeler?
Thank you, Chair Solomon. This is a question for staff. On the map is shown the two parcels out of the ones that are still left. Why were these two parcels specifically picked?
I'll defer the answer to Claudia.
It's really just a function of the individual negotiations with the property owners that the city manager has had ongoing. So as they've been able to proceed with negotiations, you know, these were the first two that we were able to come to an agreement on. So, but the city manager is pursuing negotiations with other property owners.
So as agreements continue, hopefully, to come forward, we'll continue to see these kinds of conformity?
That's correct. We did also just get recently a $65,000 grant from the County of Santa Barbara. So, and I recently submitted a couple other grant proposals, so we're hoping to get additional grant funds.
Okay. That would be good. I know this goes back, looking at that old map, but why were the Matilda parcels zoned as residential if there were significant environmental constraints obvious all along? Or were there?
I don't think I can answer that question. I think that map's pretty old.
1927.
The Bill, if you don't mind, when we were developing the general plan, those properties had been zoned residential by the county mm-hmm. for many years. And rather than change the zoning, we did the two things listed here by placing the open space overlay on them
okay.
because of their constraints, because of their proximity to, well, their own ESHA and their proximity to other sensitive areas.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
History. Is there any other land zone residential with have that might have similar significant environmental constraints that are being considered for purchase by the city?
Not that I'm aware of.
And then there was some language within the staff report talking about availability of matching grant funding being supported by a CEQA categorical exemption. How is the categorical exemption tied to availability of matching grant funding?
There's a CEQA exemption for acquisition of property for open space purposes.
And that helps in order of getting grant funding from that source and other sources?
Right, that we don't have to go through a lengthy environmental review process or prepare an initial study. The state of California has already established an exemption for this purpose.
And then the last question, thank you, is the loss of unrealized future property taxes and the loss of potential additional housing sites considered being offset by the significant public benefit of meeting the general plan intent?
The assessed value on these parcels is very low. It's been low for a long time. For example, one of the parcels purchases purchase price is $77,000, but I think the actual assessed value is much lower. So I think the overall impact on property tax revenue is pretty minimal.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chair Solomon, you will still need to officially open and close the public hearing.
Well, then I so open the public hearing. And then
you could once again give the public an opportunity to be heard before you close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Others?
Yeah, any other?
This isn't an issue with respect to the general plan per se, but I'm a stickler for full information for the public. You guys have got great maps here. It should have been in the staff report too. So it helps everybody in the community, not just us. Okay, and we've got some what appear to be students here tonight. And they probably would have benefited from that information as well. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments from commissioners? Any questions or comments from anyone else here now?
I'd be happy to make a comment. I already said this was a big item in the general plan, specifying these with an open space overlay. Because the areas there are pretty much indistinguishable from other land that we have secured and protected. And it's just really nice to see the item come up where we have the opportunity, I hope, to do one of the tasks that is identified in the general plan that I think serves such a great public function. And I wanted to thank you, Claudia, and other staff members, certainly Anne, because when opportunities like this come up, if we don't have that bundle of money ready, we'll lose them. So thanks for your work on that.
Vice Chair Sheeler.
Well, and echo what Guy just said, I apologize, should have put this in sooner rather than later at this point. But I also mentioned the loss of additional housing sites by this action. How are these housing sites quantified in our housing element or in our general plan? Are they part of the numbers or out of the numbers?
Thank you for that question. They're not counted in our housing element as potential housing sites, so we just didn't give them a number.
Madam Chair, are you ready for a motion?
I am.
Mm-hmm. First, if you would close the public hearing.
Okay. Public hearing is now closed.
Yeah, I would just like to move the resolution as identified in our staff report. Madam Clerk, would you mind reading that for me?
A resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, next in line number, California, reporting the acquisition of assessor parcel number 079-554 2024 and the acquisition of accessor parcel number 079-554-029 are in conformance with the Goleta General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, pursuant to Section 65402 of the Government Code.
Thank you.
I'll second that.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you.
Is Steve coming in for this next one?
Madam Clerk, will you please read the next item?
Thank you. Item B3 is a public hearing on 10-123-GPA, the General Plan, Coastal Land Use Plan, Housing Element Amendments.
Thank you. I'm officially opening the public hearing on this and inviting planning commissioners to make their declarations of site visits and ex parte communications, if applicable.
Not applicable.
Applicable?
No. I met with Ann Wells and with Joanna Smith to go over details of what's being presented.
Yes, as did I. And
oh, yes, and I did meet with, I met with Assistant City Attorney.
Thank you. Any others? No? Okay, thank you very much. I think we're ready for a presentation, Ms. Wells.
Thank you, Chair Solomon and Commissioners. So I have a slide presentation for you and some notes, but I really want this presentation to be interactive. And there's a team here from staff to support you, including the Assistant City Attorney and Patty Miller, the current Planning Division Manager. So I think we're ready to help you, guide you through the actions that are required of you tonight. So please stop any point along the way and ask your questions, and then we'll just go through this once or whatever else. If we need to change it up as we go, is fine too, but that's the intention, is to be interactive. So I'm just going to start with a little background. So the last couple of years, we've been working hard studying our housing element and looking at various different scenarios of our housing element and the different issues and key issues that were raised by the public, by HCD. And then the ultimate result was a draft that was sent to the state in June of 2009. And that draft was adopted by the City Council on August 18th. And coincidentally, or maybe not so coincidentally, earlier that day, August 18th, we received our comment letter from HCD, the State Housing and Community Development Department. And so the City Council had an opportunity to review that letter briefly. And in the motion to adopt the draft housing element, they also gave staff guidance to make the changes, particularly because the state's comments were mostly related to the technical appendix and then some overlapping policy changes that were better reflecting the government code. And we'll go more into detail as this presentation proceeds. So that was basically it, and that's why we're here tonight, is to come back to you almost a year later and present to you the policy changes that came out of the amendments per HCD and looking at further evaluation of the government code. So the scope of the amendments really can be lumped into 8 subjects. And some of them will be familiar to you because there were things that we looked at last year. We just didn't catch everything. For example, the extremely low income references. And if you remember, that's a new income group that had previously not existed. And it's an income group defined as a household income that is 30% or less than the median income for this area. And there were just quite a number of references that we missed, so we caught them this round and inserted them in, and you can see them in underlined strike through in the housing element attachment to the resolutions. The second one is the farm worker housing policy. Maybe that's a little more substantive than the other ones, though still relatively minor. Currently, we have a limitation on housing farm workers only to those farm workers that are working on a site. And that is not consistent with the California Health and Safety Code. And it never was consistent with the California Safety Code. So this amendment would correct that such that it wouldn't create that limitation. And it was also a derivative or something that was pointed out to us by the state HCD in their comment letter. So the correction just simply strikes the revision, strikes the limitation, and then we will proceed with implementing the correct usage of the code. But I have to point out, we've never improperly processed a case with that government code. Any questions?
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair. I just want to make sure that I understand this. Is it still okay to limit occupancy on agricultural land to agricultural workers, but simply not workers from the parcel on which the housing may be built?
Yes, however, distinguishing whether the occupants are farm workers versus another employee, you know, a restaurant worker or something like that, would be difficult to distinguish and to enforce. There are occupancy limits that are provided in the Health and Safety Code so that you have I think it's 12 single-family units or 36 aggregate beds. Mm-hmm. So beyond that point, you can regulate, and then you can limit in various ways how many workers and other conditions can be placed on that. But up to that point, it is farm workers, but the distinguishment of whether day in and day out farm workers are going to that housing unit is difficult.
So... while it may be broader than the term farm worker, as we may colloquially understand it, there remains a relationship to agriculture?
Yes. The intention is for it to be farm workers and it to be ancillary to the agricultural activities that are on that site.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So moving on to the third and fourth item is the inclusionary housing in lieu payment versus the non-residential development impact fee. So the housing element really uses those terms interchangeably and sometimes incorrectly. So they were sort of loosely almost used as jargon. And what we did was we isolated out any reference to a fee, and we looked at what the intent was and where it was related to an in-lieu payment for inclusionary housing, then we made sure that it was clearly an in-lieu payment and not a fee, because they have very strict differences in meaning. And then when it was a non-residential development impact fee under Assembly Bill 1600, then we called that a non-residential development impact fee and stayed consistent with that terminology.
In doing that, and maybe I'll clarify, the non-residential development impact fee, there's a couple policies that require payment for impacts for generating the need for more workers, thus putting more pressure on the need for housing, and that's the reason that you would have a development impact fee for non-residential. So in doing that, we saw that there's the requirement for the 3,000 square foot impact fee for a home larger than 3,000 square feet. So we have all these in-lieu fees for housing, and then there's this impact fee. Now we're in the process of a nexus study for our fees for housing, and our consultant, EPS, was working with us, and we were attempting to find some kind of justification or explanation as to how you could derive a fee, and we really couldn't come up with a rationale under the law that would allow you to flip back and forth between the fees. And so we decided that the cleanest, most legally solid way would be to not have a fee for a home larger than 3,000 square feet. So those were the items that we had for the fee issues. And if you have any questions, please ask them now. And our assistant city attorney is very familiar with fees, and she's provided excellent guidance to us to help make sure that the references to fees are accurate.
Thank you. Could you just give a very brief update on the ABA Nexus 1600 study?
I'm going to have Joanna Smith
sure.
give that explanation because she really is an expert.
I just want to know when the last one was done.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
When was our last AB 1600 Nexus study?
I believe that the current development impact fees are under a study that was done by the county, if my recollection is correct, and I believe it was adopted in the 90s. I'm not sure. Late 90s, yeah.
Yeah, I know it's on our long to-do list. You know, I just want to speak briefly about the demarcation of the 3,000 square foot cutoff labeled somewhat tenuous, and perhaps it is, and I'm not going to argue that point. I think I just want to mention how it got there, and it wasn't quite grabbed out of a hat. It was the concept that Goleta is largely tract-oriented when it comes to its housing. We know the square footage of those tracts. We know that they range from about 12 to 1,400, moving up into the 1,800, and that pretty well tops out. We also knew at the time of the adoption that higher numbers were coming in by way of remodels, up to about 2,800. So, but after that, it was pretty rare at the time to find a house that would reach the 3,000 mark. The idea, the kind of the underbelly of the thought process was that larger houses, by accommodating more people, perhaps having more cars, would increase the cost of services, would increase the necessity of certain kinds of infrastructure, and that's how the 3,000 came to be. Again, I'm not arguing for its continuation, but I don't think it's correct to label it as entirely tenuous.
Yeah. The demarcation of the 3,000 square feet makes it difficult because thus far, preliminarily, data isn't showing that it's can be found on that basis. So although it can be recognized that residential, larger residential units do do have some employees attached to it. You know, for instance, gardeners, nannies, to that extent that you can find some data and some information that provides, you know, the larger a single family unit is, the potential for an impact does occur. However, the data thus far does not make it available with the demarcation of 3,000 square feet. So the removal of this doesn't preclude that from being something to be considered in the future. It's just the difficulty that that's the line that's drawn in the sand and the data that's currently available.
You know, I understand, and I don't think it's a point worth much fighting over if you don't think it's going to fly. It's not. Okay. But I will get on my little high horse that I'm always on about the AB 1600. We need to get on with that. You know, the council was unanimous in going on a strict fee schedule, trying to recoup the cost of doing business for our city. And this, I think, is just one example of things that might need to go back into that hopper for that study, and so that we can continue to bring revenue to the city that is justified, nothing mm-hmm. that isn't.
Absolutely.
Thank you. I had a follow-up question with that for the assistant city attorney. Is there a number that the documentation would support? Obviously, it's not 3,000 square feet.
An actual study would have to be generated, which the non-residential development impact fee study is underway. And as part of that, we have preliminarily looked at residential uses along with the non-residential uses to make a complete study. However, we haven't done the detailed analysis yet under that study to get that far.
So the fifth category of changes are to the inclusionary housing requirements, and those are the housing element policies 11.5 and 11.6. And back in August, the council adopted a housing element that excluded rentals from the inclusionary requirement. And while the housing element amendments make that effectuate that direction, we thought that we could more clearly state that via the amendments that are in your resolutions today to make it easier to apply in the future or more clear. So that's the purpose of those amendments.
Ms. Wells, if I could ask, these numbers, you know, the twos, the fours, the fives, when you're dealing with hundreds of units, the math is easy. When you're dealing with a 10-unit or 12-unit proposal, the math gets more difficult. And so I'm asking if there could be some sort of an example, perhaps, that's placed in an appropriate spot so people can understand how these actually get implemented. And maybe I'll just ask the question, how would we implement, you know, two-tenths of a, you know, extremely low unit. And I know the fees are somewhere else, and those have yet to be adopted throughout. But it would be helpful, and maybe this isn't the right time because we don't have the fees per se, because we have been doing it on a case-by-case basis, right?
Right.
Yeah. But it would be helpful to see the math and see how that's done, and so the users of the general plan and the housing element have an understanding of, you know, how those get used and what that means to a proposal.
That's a very good question, Commissioner Daniels, and I think our zoning ordinance will be where we answer that question. And it's also an appropriate place to answer that question where you can actually provide the amount of detail that you need to express it. I think what our housing element does is establishes the percentages. It also allows for flexibility so that if you get a fractional unit, You can do trades. You can do something off-site. You can do a fee for that fraction. So the housing element sort of sets up the template, allows for enough flexibility, and then the zoning ordinance will effectuate that and provide the detail to guide the developer in. And you're correct that the smaller scale the development, the trickier it is to apply it. But it actually isn't tricky once you get your zoning ordinance. So that's on the near horizon. No, it's not lost. Any other questions on the inclusionary housing? All right. So the sixth category are the long-term housing affordability controls, and that's a policy that was inadvertently lost in the editing process. And it really takes, that policy is a good policy because it takes different pieces of the housing element and succinctly puts it in one place. And it basically just retains the maximum affordability controls, such as the terms of an affordable unit. And supports the use of the maximum amount under the government that's allowed under the government code. So it's a sort of an overarching directive policy that sets the tone of our housing element. So we inserted it back in.
And Ann, that was actually the fifth change, just so no one thinks that there's an additional one in there.
Oh, I have this is a six because I counted the in lieu payment and the DIF as two.
Okay.
So moving on, the technical appendix update is essentially a reorganization and an expansion of some specific information that was requested by the state in their letter, and also via some conversations that we had with the state. And if you really kind of distill it down to kind of the three essential points from my perspective, it's reorganizing the technical appendix specific with the government code, so you're not necessarily adding information, just reorganizing it. Because what the state said was to facilitate their review, to have the wording precisely restate what the government code says will make it easier for them to make the review and go down their checklist. And since they are very carefully reviewing our housing element, that will make it easier for them. So that's the one thing, is the organization and the reorganization, so shuffling things around. And now the sections that you have in the technical appendix are interrelated, so it's a little bit tricky to move things around, but we are in their order that they, of, not that they'd like to see it, because if you look at other housing elements, they're not necessarily like that, but in the order of the government code. And then also just expanding analysis on the constraints. When I say constraints to housing, for example, government fees may be a constraint. That's already in there. And the exactions, the land use controls, it's already in there. Just they want it consolidated in the place that they like to see it with the words that they like to use. That's exactly matches what's in the government code. So it's no new information. It's just a reflection of the government code restatement. And then also constraints might be environmental constraints or infrastructure constraints like pipelines or roads. And again, that information's all in there. It's just making it so that it's very simple to find it in one consolidated place. And then also an analysis of the residential capacity. There was some question on the state's part about not how much analysis was there, but sort of the having to flip around and look for the analysis of the lower income housing sites and the adequacy of sites. And in some cases where we would provide information about the sites,
They just wanted further backup and further explanation of statements that were made or examples that were provided. And so those are the kind of changes that are being made. So again, it's essentially moving things around, using the right words, and making it easier for the state to read the housing element and go through their checklist. Any questions? All right, the last item is a three cleanup items. One's to clean up the zoning ordinance time periods. So there are some policies and some implementation programs in the housing element that talk about the zoning ordinance and when it will be completed, and there were some inconsistencies in the date. So we're just tidying that up, which is to start it in 2010 and to complete in 2011. And so we're full steam in that process right now and today and every day. So you'll be seeing that pretty soon. And then also some implementation program updates to reflect items that have been completed, such as the emergency shelter. We wanted to make sure that we get credit for the things that we have done before that cutoff time of June 2009. So especially the important ones that are driven by government code. So we those are included in cleaning up those dates. Any questions? All right. So you can't just amend a general plan. We have to do our environmental document to go along with it. And I brought my props. Not all of them, just some of them. As a reminder, in 2006, we did our general plan environmental document. It's an EIR. And it evaluated the impact of build-out that our general plan envisioned out to approximately 2030. Didn't give a hard date on it, but approximately 2030. So what would the city look like based on what our land use plan map allows in 2030, and evaluate those impacts in this EIR? And then there's been subsequent amendments, and there's been addendums and a supplemental EIR, et cetera, to this. So when we say that this addendum for this housing element is an addendum to the general plan EIR, we mean this EIR as updated by all the subsequent environmental documents. Did I say that right, Joanna? It's a mouthful. I didn't bring all the documents because it's like this high. But if you had seen my office a few weeks ago, you would have seen all of these documents opened up, because we really literally have to go through and look at the impacts and check them against to see if any of the impacts assessments are altered by these policy changes. So that's what we did, and we went through the traditional sections that are in the CIR, aesthetics and agriculture and air and geology and cultural and et cetera. And the bottom line is, what we're looking for is, do these specific impacts that we looked at in 2006 and later result in any modifications of the Class 1 and the Class 2 impacts? And what we found were the general plan amendments have a less than significant impact, or Class 3, or beneficial impacts, Class 4, and that there's no need to modify any mitigations. There's no new mitigations for any impacts that are required by these amendments. And just to give context, there was a time where we did include an impact and a mitigation, and that was for Track 3. We did find an impact and added in the mitigation, which was a general plan, new general plan implementation action for a greenhouse gas inventory, and to implement that inventory to address that, the air quality impact. So that's I just want to give context that when we do this evaluation, it's really a real evaluation that can result in a new general plan policy from change in government code that you may not have thought about as it relates to that particular set of amendments. So we try to make it as like real and valid as possible and not just go through the motions. So basically the whole set of everything that has up on the screen is what we call the addendum.
Ms. Wells, with respect to your example, what kind of environmental document was necessary for the greenhouse gases that had an impact?
That was the supplemental environmental impact report. Mm-hmm. So in addition to making the environmental findings that go along with the general plan amendment, you also have to make your general plan amendment findings that the general plan amendments must be in the benefit of the public. So, of course, these are all in the government code. And so you have to make two sets of findings, one specific to the amendments and then another one that's an overall finding. The specific amendments, they're in your resolution. That's the second resolution in your packet. And I just summarized them on the screen in front of you. I can go through it if you want. I don't know if you want me to. It is in your packet on... page 106 and 107. In general, the public benefit was found because we're better complying with the law, and therefore we have better policies because of that. We're more using terminology more accurately. We're better reflecting the city council terminology or direction. We're better supporting a diverse housing stock. And it's better organized and better explained in terms of the way that government code is set up. And it reflects real-time implementation actions as of June 2006. And that was the way we came up with the final conclusion that the general plan amendments are in the public interest. And I want to point out, too, that the overall findings are a restatement of the overall findings from the original general plan.
Ms. Wells, does that conclude your presentation?
It does. And just the last screen is just to bring us back to what we're doing tonight, and that is just really essentially it's two things. You're certifying the addendum, and you're adopting that general plan housing element amendments and the various findings that go along with those that are in your resolution.
You're recommending the council to do so.
Yes. Thank you.
Okay, well, before we go any further with this, I just want to make sure that we allow any public testimony. Is there, Madam Clerk, do we have any speaker slips?
No speaker slips have been submitted.
Okay. Anyone present wish to testify on the matter? Okay, thank you. Commissioners, any further questions?
Madam Chair, I had a few questions of the staff. I found it very interesting to read the comments from Housing and Community Development. I'd never seen those before. And after having worked with the Planning Commission for several months on the housing element to get it to that point, I would have appreciated having just been that information shared with me back in August 2009. I wanted to refer specifically to some of the comments that they made just to get your feedback on them. And then I'll start with page 16. At the bottom, when it talks about realistic capacity, it says the element must include an analysis demonstrating that residential capacity estimates reflect realistic capacity based on development trends, land use controls, and site improvements. My question is, how is Planning and Environmental Services expected to know what development trends will be through the planning horizon of this document?
Thank you, Vice Chair Sheeler. So what we use are economic forecasts for this area, and we're fortunate here that we have economic forecasts for the Goleta Valley and at UCSB. And so that's what we use to look at and forecast in our horizon. And we also really rely on
the development trends as they are today, which is pretty much we're looking at build out. And so that's why we look at our concept and pending projects in our technical appendix. We don't just look at the approved projects. We're looking at those things that are on the horizon, and that's what we're really looking out for our 8-year planning period.
So when you do your annual review, you then reflect the most recent development trends or economic analysis that's available at that time?
Correct. So our annual report that goes to the state, which will be up pretty soon here, we'll go look back at the past year at what's happened, and then we'll also forecast out what we see on the horizon.
On page 17, number 2, it talks about demonstrating local efforts to remove governmental constraints that hinder the locality from meeting its share of the regional housing needs. You kind of mentioned that in the context of the technical appendix and the cleanup issues. Where is this information located? Is there anywhere where there's a summary of local efforts that are underway that are listed in our general plan or housing element to remove governmental constraints? I didn't know where I would.
Are you under the environmental constraints section?
Page 17.
Further down.
Under the letter.
Oh. Under the letter, yeah. Number 2.
Oh, sorry. Could you?
That was one of the critiques, is that HCD wanted some analysis or compilation of what these efforts are.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just wondering if such a compilation exists of what the city is
it
currently
does.
Doing and where that's located.
There's a couple different sections in the technical appendix that deal with governmental constraints. They're not necessarily side by side.
Okay.
Joanna, do you want to add to that?
Well, those are going to be expanded upon so that they are comprehensive. It's in there, but it's not to the level of detail and analysis that HCD requested, and so that is how the technical one instance in which the technical appendix is being revised to provide that information in further detail.
When the technical appendix is revised to reflect this additional information in detail, who then looks at that before it goes back to HCD as a response?
Well, the City Council will be taking this item up next week on Tuesday, and they'll see the technical appendix along with it.
Mm-hmm.
And the updated technical appendix, including?
The revisions.
Okay.
Correct.
The technical appendix is being revised per the Council direction when they adopted the updated housing element. All changes to the technical appendix are limited to those HCD comments that were made. And that's per council direction. That was the direction that they provided in 2009.
On page 18, under inclusionary requirements, it has, I guess I'm asking, how is the city promoting compliance with inclusionary requirements, and how has the city engaged the development community to facilitate this analysis?
Now, again, this is the words, and it's one of the reasons we really took a close look at the way we used fees and the cleanup of the terms fees. And we'll use more discussion about why we did this amendment in the technical appendix and clearly teased out how we're applying the fees, why we're applying the fees, which it's in there, but just elaborating on that in the words that the government code likes.
Okay. Page 20, and maybe this is, well, let's see, it's number 2 on page 20, and it talks about what kind of incentives or regulatory concessions will be adequate to encourage the building of single-room occupancy units. They talk about creating incentives or regulatory concessions, and I guess my question back to staff is, are there concessions or incentives that you realistically think will be adequate to encourage the building of single-room occupancy units?
Well, single room occupancy units will be one housing type that will be addressed in the zoning code, which will update incentives and other means in which that type of housing is encouraged. Single room occupancy units are permitted use in many zones throughout the city. So currently, that is one way in which it is encouraged as a housing type, because it's by and large a permitted use in many zoning districts.
And for example, we might say in our technical appendix that it's a permitted use, but then we don't say what zones. So we're expanding and adding more detail per the HCD's request.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah. When did you say the technical appendix is going to be done with its update?
The reason that I'm looking at the assistant city attorney is because some of this is we're doing a back and forth with the technical appendix, doing an internal sort of checks and balances back with the government code, because it, in a sense, that is what HCD asked, was make this thing read like the government code. That needs the help of an attorney. And so...
Yes, only an attorney could do that, I'm sure.
So
I still like you.
We are valuable.
So we're working on that. We're cleaning it up right now, and I'll let Joanna move.
Well, that's okay. You know, I was just thinking, I have an old copy of the technical report, but it's the Planning Commission ordinarily sees anything associated with the general plan in order to make a recommendation to the City Council in its advisory role. And I think Vice Chair Sheeler's questions really point out that we should have that document. I think I can speak for Bill and myself, but I think it might be useful for all of us when it's ready.
So procedurally, once, if the housing element is adopted by the City Council, we will ship it up to the state for another round of review. But once it's adopted, we will reissue replacement pages out.
Yeah, but do we all have the technical appendix?
You have the technical appendix that the council adopted on August 18th, 2009, or 19th. But in their motion when they adopted it, it was with direction to change it to meet the...
Okay, so we'll be getting the...
Yeah.
The new stuff in a timely manner.
Okay. Yes.
Ms. Wells, this is a lot of work. I know that, having done some things similar years past. I'm glad I didn't have to do this time. And having to go through double, triple, quadruple check these things is very tedious and time-consuming. So I appreciate your hard efforts in this process. I just see a lot of these things as technical changes and clarifications, and I don't see an issue with any of it. So. I'm satisfied with the work itself. Thank you.
Yeah, I'd like to second that, and also for giving us a little more time to be, you know, to talk with you directly and have a lot of our questions answered, even, you know, previously to coming here, to be able to read it with more understanding as to what we really were looking at. And so I think you've both done a great job, and I thank you for your work.
I agree with Brent's comments. I think that these are technical, by and large, technical changes, and I appreciate staff's work. Not to be too critical, but, you know, the city has been dealing with the state on the issue of certification of the housing element for years, and It just seems that they have never been quite clear if they want something in a specific format, if they want something to follow a certain kind of outline, and doing that now has required so much work on the part of staff. It would be very helpful if they would say so up front, and they did not. So it's cost time, it's cost our staff a lot of work, and it's delayed things a lot. And we have said these look like technical changes, not substantive changes anyway. So if the state had said from the outset that it wanted to see things in a certain format, that would have been very helpful.
I think that's a point upon which we can all agree. I think it would be helpful, Ms. Wells, just at this point, and really for all of our benefit, if you could just restate what the state certification means in terms of benefits to the city of Goleta.
In a more simplified way, state certification is not mandatory. It offers us a couple benefits, significant benefits, and then there's some other minor ones. But the two important ones are it gives us some protections from legal challenge. It puts the burden of proof on the challenger instead of us. And then also it opens us up to receiving some grant funding that we wouldn't otherwise be able to get, which we aren't able to get now. But so far that hasn't held us back. But I think as we mature, those grant funds are going to become more important to us. So I think it's time to start taking certification seriously, though I don't think it's hurt us yet.
Well, certainly the process of obtaining certification and going through this exercise of refining and clarifying the general plan itself is beneficial to the city. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we, of course, all appreciate your hard work. And I wonder if I could have a motion.
I'll step up. If Madam Secretary could help with the wording here, we've got a couple specific recommendations that we have to go with. The adoption, I move for the adoption or recommending adoption of Resolution 10, next in line for the Planning Commission. It's for the general plan, and if I can get to the specifics, and then also recommend adoption of Resolution 10, next in line for the housing element amendments as well.
Madam Clerk, would you just read those complete with the CEQA language in there? Thank you.
Resolution 10-, next in line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council certification of the 2010 Housing Element Amendments, CEQA Addendum, to the Goleta General Plan Coastal Land Use Plan Use Plan Final Environmental Impact Report. And the second resolution
I'm sorry. Let's just stop there. Thank you. I want to make sure that we're clear that we're voting on two separate resolutions. So are all my fellow planning commissioners clear that we are actually certifying the CEQA addendum? Yes? Okay. May I have a second?
I'll second Commissioner Daniels.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Aye.
Carries 5-0. Okay. Please.
The second resolution is Resolution 10-, next in line, entitled A Resolution of the Planning Commission of the City of Goleta, California, recommending to the City Council adoption of the housing element amendments to the General Plan Coastal Land Use Plan.
So moved.
I second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Thank you all very much, and thank you, Commissioner Daniels, for making those motions. Okay, I believe we're ready for the director's report. Ms. Miller.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Commissioners. I don't have any substantial items for you this evening, but I did want to make a couple of remarks about your upcoming schedule, just some reminders. The November 22nd meeting is not going to be held due to the City Hall closure during the Thanksgiving holiday. So we will reconvene again on December 13th. You have two items for that evening, and we expect that they will be fairly substantial. One of the items is the one that got continued from this evening, the Montecito Bank and Trust Project, and the other one is the Elwood Wells Abandonment Project. The notices for those projects have not gone out yet because it's a 10-day prior. So if something urgent comes up, that may change. So those are tentative, and I always like to say that those this far out, those are tentative until they're noticed. But that's what we project at the moment. Looking just a little bit further out in December, you would ordinarily meet on the 27th, and that will also not be held due to City Hall closure during the holidays. And I just wanted to generally say that as we get into the next year, I believe you're going to have a relatively steady stream of projects for that first quarter at least, and if not, most of the year. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Miller. Any comments from the Planning Commission?
Yes, Chair. Can I ask what class the students are here from today, please? Somebody can volunteer that? Sure. Appreciate that. Could you state your name and the class and school that you're coming from?
We're from UCSB, and we are in the ES 116 Sustainable Communities class.
And the professor in that class?
Professor Wilkinson. Bob Wilkinson.
Could you tell him Commissioner Daniel said hi?
All right, well.
Thank you very much.
Can you tell us what was your assignment this evening that brought you here?
We're just here to, you know, watch you guys, see what goes on here, because a lot of us have never been to one of these, so that's what we're doing. So, yep.
Thank you. Yep. Thank you all very much. Any other comments? Okay.
Move to adjourn.
Meeting adjourned. Thank you.